So I go now to Dr. Stephen Crabb, who joins me from the University of Portsmouth. Stephen, did I pronounce your surname correctly?
Yes, you did. And hi, Lindsay. Thank you for having me on.
Ah, so that sounds like an interesting accent.
It is. I do work at the University of Portsmouth, but I'm originally from Scotland.
I can hear you're Scottish. there you go. And there you are, a lecturer in applied linguistics and translation. And one of the translations you do is Japanese to English. Are you a multilingual?
No, unfortunately, it's only English and Japanese. I'm actually a Scottish person teaching Japanese at an English university.
I love it. In South Africa, we would call you bilingual because the word bio is an Afrikaans word for many. So it would be just obviously playing with the fact that you're lingual and you're multilingual.
Well, thank you. I've learned something new tonight.
Yeah, so you can say you're bilingual and people will think that you can speak Afrikaans too. So, you know, a lot of people today, especially young people, have an obligatory tattoo. And some go for the very daring little rose, and some people go for perhaps a little bit more of a design. And the one thing most people say is, do not tattoo the name of your partner. Angelina Jolie has learned that the hard way.
Indeed. What is interesting is you're exactly right. If you go online, you do see all these warnings about not tattooing your partner's name on your body. And yet, if you Google it, there are literally tens of thousands of posts about people who have done it. And all these posts on social media suggest that, despite the warning, it's actually a really sought-after demonstration of commitment nowadays.
Yes.
And not just in my country, Britain. And I suppose this is what got me interested in the subject, whether actually this practice of tattooing your lover's name on your body was something that only happens at this time, or does it go back to previous centuries?
And of course, with your knowledge of Japanese, you would be well placed to do the research that took you back to the fact that this went back to olden days Japan.
Well, yes, indeed. I decided to look particularly at Japan for one reason. It has a very long tattoo history. And actually, there's a lot of evidence in Japanese literature, Japanese art, and Japanese official records from what is called the Edo period in Japan that tattooing was widely practiced. And the Edo period was a period between 1603 and 1868. And it was really considered to be a golden age for tattooing in the country. And at this time, tattoos were used for four main reasons. The first one was for branding criminals.
Yep.
The second one was
for sailors,
almost like body decoration, particularly among working class men, such as firefighters, fishermen, carpenters, builders. They're also used to show, believe it or not, loyalty and obedience by gangs and outlaws. And finally, and what we are going to talk about tonight, they were used to show love between female courtesans and their male lovers.
So the courtesans would show their allegiance to their paymaster via tattoo.
Indeed. Well, first I should say that it wasn't common for, say, a married woman to tattoo her husband's name on her upper arm.
Yes.
These tattoos generally represented secret love affairs or forbidden love or personal desire. And they were mainly between Japanese female courtesans and their possibly married male lovers. Marriage in Japan at this time actually had nothing to do with romantic love. It was an arrangement between two families, and it was often done maybe to add new members to a family's workforce or to form alliances between families. So what symbols of romantic devotion you do see in the literature and the art of 18th century Japan were generally those between courtesans and their male lovers. And there's lots and lots of really interesting descriptions and illustrations of these symbols of love. For example, courtesans would write pledges of eternal love to their male lovers and possibly sign it with their blood. Or courtesans would cut off a lock of their hair and present it to their male lover. And most interesting, courtesans would tattoo the name of their male lover on their upper arm. And they would also, very often, tattoo the word for life in Japanese. It's inochi. And this was to signify the hope on the courtesan's part that this commitment would be until death did they part.
Absolutely. Was it on the inner arm, or as people sport it now, on the sort of bicep?
Well, it was in the it was generally on the upper part of the arm. And because these tattoos represented like secret love affairs or forbidden love, they were generally put in a place on the body that was not visible.
Yes, yes.
And this was unlike all the other tattoos I talked about earlier, for example, used for branding criminals or as body decoration, which were very visible. And it was thought at the time that a tattoo on the upper arm was secret, i.e. there was little chance of it maybe being accidentally revealed in public, but also it was quite easy to reveal when necessary between the lovers themselves.
Yes, and so should you stray and get down and dirty with another lover, the other lover would find that you actually had committed yourself to someone else.
Oh, well, yes, indeed. And there are actually records of courtesans repeatedly having to remove old tattoos when their lovers changed.
But the courtesan of Japan was a different kind of breed, if you like. You can't really call them sex workers. They were really women who were incredibly educated. They were conversationalists. They weren't just for men's sexual pleasure.
Yes, indeed. It wasn't solely about sexual pleasure, as you say. And this might be one reason why love blossomed from these relationships, because the women themselves were offering far more than just sexual pleasure. And were often, as you say, quite well educated for the time. So they would, for example, be able to read and write and would actually be writing pledges of eternal love to their male lovers.
Now, when you did your research on this, was it something that was easy to find? Was there commentary on, you know, some of often we hear about people having a tattoo and instead of putting somebody's name or for example, putting a word in a different language, they found out it meant the opposite. Was there that kind of anecdotal comment, or because it went back some time?
Yes, well, actually, it's very interesting. In the literature of this period that I called the Edo period, the practices that I just talked about, the writing pledges of eternal love, the cutting of locks of hair and the tattooing were frequently described. And they even were satirized. And I think that in itself is one indication of just how popular these things were. And There's a really amusing example actually from a book that was published in 1785, and it was called Playboy Roasted a la Edo. And it's by a Japanese writer and an artist called Santo Kyoden. And in this book, he talks about the comic adventures of this young man called Injiro. And Injiro really wants to be a popular playboy and have lots of lovers. So the book says that, and I quote here, Injiro hears that tattoos illicit affairs. So he immediately has his arms covered with the names of 20 or 30 fictitious lovers, all the way down to the crooks of his fingers. And enduring the agony, and this would be the agony of being tattooed, he rejoices because he will be seen now as a successful lover, having all these tattoos of courtesans' names on him.
Badge of honour for a Valentino of the time.
Indeed, for a wannabe Valentino, indeed, yes.
So how did they remove them? Was it a similar process that we find people need to go through when they are no longer enamoured of their partners?
Indeed, in the 18th century, like today, not all relationships did last a lifetime. And when the commitment between the lovers ended, yes, the tattoos, like nowadays, were no longer desired. And in 18th century Japan, the tattoos were literally burnt off the skin.
Wow.
And two methods were generally used. The first method was they used the bowl at the end of a tobacco pipe, and they actually would heat up the bowl, put it on the skin to burn off the tattoo. Or the second method was they would get dried leaves from a plant called the mugwort plant. And the leaves of this plant are very inflammable. And again, they would press the plant against the skin, thus burning the skin. And by repeatedly doing this, they would literally be able to burn off the tattoo.
Because, the way that tattoo works, I mean, we were on Cape Talk earlier. Somebody was asking a question about burning and burns healing. And the naked scientist was answering general questions. And he was saying, well, obviously, if the burn is just in the dermis of your skin, as it goes deeper, it becomes more difficult to repair if the stem cells are involved. And tattoos work in that the ink goes to a place that obviously is not going to repair, and that the ink stays.
Indeed.
It's quite a tricky point if you're burning it off, because you can in fact burn down to the level of the stem cells, and then your skin doesn't recover.
Indeed. Well, you know, first, either method, I can't imagine how painful they would have been. But over and above that, both methods would almost certainly have left almost permanent scarring of the skin, almost to remind the lovers of their failed relationship. And yet, despite the painfulness of these tattoo removal methods, tattoos remained really popular in Japan until about the middle of the 19th century, when the Japanese government started cracking down on them.
And then it went out of favor. How trendy? I mean, because a lot of people conform to non-conformism and feel that they're quite naughty by getting a tattoo. But in essence, now it's almost obligatory. So it's lost that appeal. Did it run out of favor? And at the moment, is it as trendy as it is for many people around the world, for young people to have tattoos?
Two really interesting points. The first point was tattooing was banned in 1872 by the Japanese government. And one of the reasons why it was banned is because foreigners were increasingly arriving in Japan at this time. And the Japanese government were really worried that they would see tattooing as being somewhat backwards or
Oh, okay.
primitive. And what was really ironic is the Japanese tattoo artists were actually had become so skilled at their jobs that the very foreigners arriving in Japan wanted to have tattoos done by Japanese tattoo artists. And there's a really famous example in 1881 of the British Duke of York, who became King George V of England. When he went to Japan, he actually had a tattoo, not a lover's name, I should quickly add, but he got a tattoo of a red and blue dragon done by a Japanese tattoo artist. But tattoos did remain banned, and it wasn't until 1948 that actually the US occupation forces made tattooing legal again. And to answer your second point about the popularity of tattoos, it's difficult to say exactly, as tattooing is not centrally regulated in Japan, but it's estimated that there are currently about 5,000 tattoo artists in Japan. Now, if we compare that to 1990, which was not that long ago, in 1990 it was estimated there's 200. Now in 2017, estimates say there's up to 5,000. That is a massive increase in the number of tattoo artists in Japan, and suggests that it's becoming increasingly popular with young people in Japan, like it is in many other countries.
Okay, and so I think with the advent of social media, I would be surprised if it didn't follow the trend of young people around the world.
Indeed, indeed. Well, what is really interesting is, yes, young people generally are becoming more and more accepting of tattoos, but in Japan there is a big generation gap with regard to tattoos. And just last September, there is a city in Japan called Osaka, and a tattoo artist called Taiki Masuda was taken to court by the Osaka police. And the reason why they arrested this tattoo artist was he was accused of tattooing without having a medical license.
Wow.
And there's a old law in Japan, actually called the Medical Practitioner Act, that dates back to 1948. And this act says that in order to be engaged in a medical practice, you need to be a qualified medical practitioner, in other words, a doctor. And over the last few years, police in certain parts of Japan have been using this act to arrest tattoo artists, saying that tattooing, by the fact that a needle is inserted into the skin, is in fact a medical act, thus should be performed by a licensed doctor. So this is a big court case at the moment. The Osaka District Court delivered a verdict on the 27th of September last year, saying that this tattoo artist, Mr. Masuda, was going to be fined for being a tattooist without being a qualified medical doctor. And Mr. Masuda's team is now going to take this court decision to a higher level of court, and this is going to probably take place in the next year or two. But it has massive implications for the future of tattooing in Japan, because if a higher court agrees with this lower court and says that in order to be a tattoo artist, you need to have a medical practitioner's license, i.e., you need to be a qualified medical doctor, I can imagine many of the currently 5,000 tattoo artists in Japan will be charged with the same crime and might give up tattooing, possibly go underground or even go abroad to work. So it's a really interesting time in Japan for tattooing.
Well, I was thinking that how different from China, where with acupuncture, putting needles into somebody is done on a fairly regular basis. I'm thinking of course, the Chinese symbols, and I remember meeting an artist who spent a lot of time using the art of the symbols. Japan also is a very beautiful looking language. Are some of the words artistic looking? Are there some more favored symbols? I mean, obviously we're talking in the context of somebody's name, but if you were to look at other things that people had tattoos on their body.
Well, in Japan now, very traditional tattoos wouldn't have many words. They'd be more pictorial based.
Okay.
So you would have pictures of dragons or demon masks or ghosts or monsters, and most of these would come from Japanese mythology.
Okay.
But what is interesting in Britain anyway, I do notice as I walk along the street and people show tattoos quite visibly here, I do see tattoos of Japanese writing, and they seem to be very popular among British people, because Japan has, in terms of writing, Japan has three writing systems, and one of the writing systems, katakana, is a phonetic writing system, which means that even if you do not have a Japanese name, you can almost spell out your name using the katakana symbols. So it's become quite popular. So I could, for example, my name is Stephen Crab. I could write Stephen quite easily in Japanese. And you see quite a lot of people with Japanese tattoos of their name.
Yes.
The only problem is I see many mistakes too.
Well, that's once again the problem with street corners where they say have your name in Japanese symbols, and then you find out that they've been loosely translated, and there are some errors that sometimes creep in. But of course, if you don't have someone like you who's multilingual, nobody would know.
Yes, indeed, nobody would know, and I've occasionally have, for example, gone into a shop and I've seen somebody in the shop with a Japanese tattoo, and I've never actually gone up and said to them, I've often wondered, do they actually know what this tattoo means?
Okay.
And if they did know what it means, I wonder, would they have actually got it done? However, I've never been brave enough to actually go up to the person who I've seen with the tattoo and actually say to them, do you know what this means? Just in case they think it means something different.
Yeah, in some cases it's best to hold your tongue. So when you are involved in translation, what kind of calling do you have to translate Japanese into English? Is that mostly in the business sector?
At the moment, science and technology is a very big field for Japanese translation. If you just think the very large number of Japanese manufacturers that make consumer electronic products, for example, and all these consumer electronic products, they need user manuals, and the user manuals need to be translated into multiple languages. So there is quite a big demand for translation in particularly the technical or the scientific field.
And of course, we always make a mockery of those translations when they are done with somebody who's not fully lingual in the language they're translating into.
Before I became a university lecturer, I worked as a professional translator. And one of the companies that I worked for was Panasonic. This is going back quite a number of years. But I used to translate the Panasonic user manuals for their their digital cameras and their DVD and video recorders.
Okay.
And I remember one of my managers telling me that, well, Stephen, possibly your translations have been read by more people than, for example, Stephen King, the
Yes.
novelist. But you will never have somebody come up to you and say, I'd just like to thank you, Stephen. I really, really enjoyed reading that user manual that you translated for my DVD player. And indeed, I never did get that.
Well, you'd be sure to have them complain if your instructions didn't help them how to
Yes, indeed.
eject the dongle or whatever it was.
Yes.
Well, Stephen, thank you. Clearly, your love and passion for Japanese has helped us understand this age-old tradition. Of course, as you say, it doesn't matter how many times you tell people it's not the smartest thing in the world to tattoo your current lover on your body, people are still going to do it. So,
Indeed, people still do it.
yeah.
However, we can only but try to warn people, Joe. The problem with tattooing lovers' names has already spanned centuries and continents, and I think it's going to continue to endure.
Peggy's just SMS and she says top of the morning to one and all. She says I do. That's a bit Irish, but never mind. I do calligraphy. I do a calligraphy a wee bit from time to time. Listening to your guest brought me a wee tear to my eye. She says I must just now put pen to paper and try my hand at the art of Japanese art. that's from
Your
Peggy.
Scottish accent was very good.
Well, I'm told my surname Borhill is has some sort of a heritage that goes back as far as the 14th century, and in Scotland they'd say Borhill, which of course is.
Indeed, I think that is possibly a more Scottish name than my family name, which is Crab.
Yes, I'm sure people go crabby because of the two B's too.
Indeed, yes,
Yes. Yes. Well, Stephen, thank you very much for your time on Cape Talk. It is much appreciated.
No, thank you very much for having me on, Lindsay. I appreciate it too.
You take care.